Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I am your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, how are you today?
Doing well, Kyle. How has your week been?
Man, it's been good. I'm looking forward to getting out next week. We've had a ton of snow, so I've kind of been indoors quite a bit, feeling a little bit like a hermit. But I'm thinking next week's going to be a little bit better. Cold as hell, but not so snowy. How about you?
Pretty much the same. I'm curious, though, what do you do on a snowy day? What is Kyle's good fever routine?
My routine's pretty, I don't know, it's pretty simple. I like to try and stay busy. I get a lot of work done around the house, get some laundry done. Watched a ton of Netflix. I watched an entire series on Netflix called Sex Education. It's like a British comedy teen show, kind of. I don't. It was pretty funny. Worth checking out if you've got some downtime. But for the most part, it was just too damn cold to even go outside and have any fun with the kids. So we've just been kind of sitting around.
That sounds like a way to spend your time. Yeah.
Nice. Well, I'm interested to talk more about our topic this week. You guys are listening to episode 76, and this week we're discussing the 2000 thriller Unbreakable. Before we dive into Unbreakable, you guys can go over, check out one of our sponsors right now at fivefingertees.com. They have a bunch of amazing t-shirts, hoodies, everything reasonably priced, $10, $30 for most shirts. And use promo code 5OFF at checkout and save yourself a little money. And then also help support the show. Go on to iTunes, give us a rate, review. Make sure you hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Everything's totally free. We're also on Google Play, CastBox, and YouTube. And that's the best way to help support the show. So JD, last week we discussed one of my favorite movies of all time, The Goonies. What was your feedback on our Goonies episode?
I think everybody who has either seen The Goonies and they love The Goonies, or if they're not familiar yet with The Goonies, it sort of revitalizes what is an 80s classic for them. So nothing but love. Props to you for picking this out. I know you've, since day one, been wanting to do Goonies. So it was kind of a pleasure to revisit a movie that I honestly hadn't seen since I was a child.
Well, I'm happy you got to watch it. And I got a lot of good feedback on Twitter. I felt like our Twitter kind of blew up for a couple of days. We had a ton of responses. I did catch some hate, as I thought I might, for picking the Newfound Glory version of Good Enough over the Cyndi Lauper version. But I'm totally fine with that because I do love some Newfound Glory. JD, refresh my memory. Are you a Newfound Glory guy? I know you like Blink-182.
I didn't mind them. I was late to the punk scene when punk was a thing in our generation. We're not talking about 80s punk for when that was alive and kicking, but I was definitely later to the scene, more in towards the end when Simple Plan and all of them were sort of really picking up steam.
Okay.
So, you know, in terms of who I liked, I was more of into like them and Taking Back Sunday even, and The Used, stuff like that was more my jam.
I do love Taking Back Sunday, but gosh, I actually got to watch Newfound Glory at Warped Tour one year, and they by far stole the show that day. On stage, amazing. They're very interactive. Some bands, like, I went and saw Finch one time, and the lead singer didn't like to even look at the crowd. It was so weird. He was so introverted. I'm like, dude, you can't be a lead singer. You guys just need to maybe just put out CDs and not tour at all. It was brutal.
What was their big song again?
Which one?
Finch. They had what was
what
theirs?
It is to burn.
Is that what it was?
Yep.
You didn't even have to hesitate there.
No, no, it's a great song. I like that one. I'm more a fan of... There's a song on their first album. It's the last song on the CD called Ender. I think it's like 9 minutes long. I love that song. Yeah, Newfound Glory for me was always one of my favorites. But we appreciate all the love. Again, our Twitter is at BackInTimePod if you want to tweet us something. Or you can shoot us a good old-fashioned email. Give us some ideas for the show, backintimepodcast@gmail.com. And who knows, your request may be granted and we'll do your episode as soon as we can. Now, JD, let's talk about the reason we're here today. What's your first memories of watching Unbreakable?
I saw this movie when it came out in theaters. I remember being super excited about it because at the time, and even when I was younger, I was a huge comic book fan. And so, yeah, M. Night's making the name for himself. We're talking about on the heels of Sixth Sense and how he just shattered into cinema with that flick. And I remember going with some buddies from football to see this movie and being super pumped. I think I was the only one that really thoroughly enjoyed it. And this has always stuck to my bones as being a great film. I probably watch it once every 2 to 3 years. But probably less so now that this whole glut of superhero movies is out there to sort of absorb all of that interest. But man, I've loved this movie since the moment I saw it. And the whole twist ending that we won't spoil anything if you haven't watched it yet. Obviously, if you don't know who M. Night Shyamalan is, then you should do some research before you listen to the show.
Yeah, he's got quite the resume. Although he's kind of got a cool story, too. The way that he like rose to the prominence as this huge director, and then it was like fall from grace. Like everything he touched, people are like, stay away, stay away. And then all of a sudden he's got this comeback in the last, like, I don't know, what, maybe 5 to 7 years. But there's a while there where it's like, ooh, you don't want to be involved with that guy.
Yeah, he was untouchable in the way that don't touch him because he's just negative energy. But he really pulled back. I want to say The Visit was probably his return to grace. And if I'm not mistaken, that was his first film that he did with Blumhouse.
Okay. I that has to be true.
And you can fact check me if you want. The point being that both Split and then even this were Blumhouse films. Glass. Split and Glass were Blumhouse films, part two and part three of the Unbreakable series. And he's really, they've attached each other to like, the right star, where Jason Blum's been able to do great things as a producer for M. Night, and M. Night's been able to come back into a new form as a writer and director for himself.
Yeah, and quick fact check, that is true. The Visit was the first one with Blumhouse. But yeah, he had done the, I wouldn't call it a stinker, but it was definitely disappointing. He did that After Earth movie with Will Smith and his son Jaden. It was kind of a flop here in the States. It did okay, like, worldwide, but it definitely was a bit of a disappointer. The Last Airbender was a huge miss. The Happening was a miss. I feel like Lady in the Water, without doing some quick research, was a bit of a miss, too. So it's like he like hit, like, 4 home runs in a row and then struck out a bunch.
Well, even the Village didn't really perform the way that he expected it to, or even... Yeah. Audiences or critics thought that the movie was going to be. And I personally love The Village. I think it's a cool story. I think the score is amazing. The acting is pretty solid. But that one fell pretty far. So that was kind of maybe the first stumbling block in his career.
Yeah, that was definitely the first chink in the armor, for sure. So we wanted to do things a little bit different today. This is going to be kind of like a general discussion / a version of our teaser trailer episode. If you want to listen to like the full scene-by-scene breakdown, go check out our buddy Brian at Terrible Terror Podcast. He just put it out last week. It's a great episode. I would just recommend you go listen to that if you want the scene-by-scene breakdown like we normally do. But JD, I thought it would be cool if you could give the audience a little bit of an insight into if they've never watched Unbreakable. Let's say they came into the series with Split. How do the two tie in together? And why the heck did it take 17 years to get a sequel?
So that's a hell of a question to ask. And I don't want to get on you for asking the wrong question at the wrong time. But it's, you have to understand that each of these three parts of the story are in their own right an origin story for the character. Unbreakable being the origin story for David Dunn, Split being origin story for Crumb, and then Glass is not a traditional origin story for Mr. Glass because he played a critical character in essentially Unbreakable, where we learn a lot about him and his past, and not too much of that is unveiled in the new movie. But you have to look at all three movies together as one lump sum. And I think to an extent, from a writing standpoint and from what I've read, a lot of what is in the newest film was sort of conceived to exist because of the original film. Now, I know that he did, when he jumped into Split, it was sort of an opportunity to do his own thing. And then he loosely ties it back into the Unbreakable universe. Anything could have happened. It was kind of a very lazy twist. Very cool, but yeah, very lazy at the end of Split. But, you know, for why it would take so long is you have to look at this, the state of both him as the director and then the state of superhero films. And then you have to do comparable indie superhero films. And there's really not much of a market for that. If you look at, like, well, what is there? There's Cross by good old Patty Durham. Patrick Durham, he's a great guy.
It's a nice name drop. Nobody knows.
Hey, it's okay if you've seen Cross. It's out there.
Hatchet.
You'd call Hatchet a superhero?
Indie, right? Oh, not superhero. I was just thinking. I thought you meant like indie trilogies. My bad.
Well, no, 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 no. So sorry. I'm focusing on the indie superhero movies out there. Okay. And the only other ones I can think of is Super with Rainn Wilson and what, Chronicle, which was a one and done. And I guess Incredibles, technically, which just got a second one.
Yeah.
So
it took a while, but yeah, you're dead on.
Outside of what Marvel has done successfully, what Sony's done, what Fox has done, and what DC tries to do but fails to do, there's not much of a market for people looking at what they don't already know is established property. And that existing IP is a lot to get over. And it's very exciting to me to see, does this franchise go somewhere from where Glass is? Because they've essentially established their own cinematic universe where anything can happen. And we already have, you know, there's already stake in the game where we feel for the characters from Unbreakable. We feel for the characters from Split. And now we feel for the characters from Glass.
So that's a perfect transition without giving away too much, because we're going to do like a full spoiler review here in the next day or two. What did you think about the new Glass film? Because it's been met with mixed reviews.
I can go either way with how I feel about the movie. I wanted to sit down and watch the film and enjoy it for what it is. It's part three of a film trilogy that started with Unbreakable back in 2000. That M. Night Shyamalan sort of broke the mold for what he was even known for with The Sixth Sense, and then all of a sudden he comes with this superhero origin film. And that's how I went into this movie, and for me, it hit the mark for what I wanted it to do. It made you get closer to a lot of the characters. There was times when you even questioned your own sanity as a viewer, and there's a couple of solid twists in there that you could probably see from a mile away, but if you sit down and enjoy the movie for what it is, be surprised by it and enjoy it. On the other hand, I can be much more critical, as I am, again, a huge superhero nerd. I sat there and was like, okay, well, that scene's from, you know, X-Men First Class, and right there, that scene's from Iron Man. And like, you can just pick and pick and pick all the tropes that he sort of threw in there to be a part of this superhero finale, where it's just like, but that's the point of it, you know, to another extent, that it's made to mimic how big of a influence comics are in this universe. So you can't hate it for that, but at the same time, you can't give M. Night Shyamalan like loads of praise for like creating anything new, because he's essentially by the book in many ways. I mean, a lot of the movie reminded me of the show Legion. Again, there's a lot of the things that they do in the X-Men franchise, both the films and the comic books, which sort of come back with, again, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a lot of similarities between other things, but there's also a lot of good, and it's fun to watch superheroes actually fight, which was cool. A key difference between MCU movies, where you don't often just see people, you know, there's a lot of gun shooting in those.
Well, as we normally do on this podcast, let's talk a little bit about the numbers. Here's what we know about the weekend numbers as of Sunday night. They're estimating 40.58 million over the three-day weekend. Universal had anticipated closer to 50 over the actual four-day holiday weekend. So they're estimating they'll end up probably around 47, pretty much on par. But that three-day already more than doubles the film's reported $20 million budget. And in terms of some of the records, basically it's the fourth largest January opening of all time. And it's also on track to be the third largest Martin Luther King weekend performance of all time. So from a financial standpoint, it definitely seems like a home run there. Are you surprised at all by that?
No, I'm not surprised. I guess the only surprise that I have is how dismal January numbers can actually be.
I wanted to keep part of what is our normal teaser trailer episode. So let's go ahead and fire up YouTube and let's type in Unbreakable Original Trailer. We're going to be looking for the one that's titled Unbreakable Trailer with 4.8 million views. And it was uploaded by Kind of Dune. I'll give a 3-2-1 click countdown and we can watch this thing together. JD, are you ready?
Ready to rock and roll.
All right, let's do it. 3-2-1 click.
Hi. You're in the emergency room of the Philadelphia City Hospital. Ask you some questions. Where are you sitting on the train?
Against the window.
In the passenger car?
Yes.
You're certain you were in the passenger car?
Yeah. Where are the other passengers?
Train derailed. Took a curve too fast. A second train collided with yours after it derailed. The debris spread over 1 mile.
Why are you looking at me like that?
There are two reasons why I'm looking at you like this. One, because it seems you are the only survivor of this train wreck. And two, you don't have a scratch on you.
I know what's going through your mind right now. You're searching for meaning in all of this. Know one thing. 131 people died so you could finally understand the destiny for which you were born. Are you ready for the truth?
Okay, JD, start us off. What do you think about the trailer?
I had not seen this trailer in a very long time, so I was very excited that we got to watch it because that is kind of the perfect setup for this movie without giving away very much of anything. For it to just slowly just slide across those beats of the train crash and what has happened and the result of it, and we're left with so many questions. You know, we're not given really any answers, and it's sort of pulls you in to this mystery, and it plays so much differently than I think than even the modern versions of in the franchise and so many other superhero movies, where it's so much more of a thriller and so much more like early Shyamalan with the way he weaves a tale and just makes it slowly creeping out at you. And I think this trailer does a great job of presenting that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the trailer. It gets me excited about watching this movie. And it also, I think it does a great job of really not giving away anything. I don't think anybody would watch this trailer and go, wow, I got it all figured out. It's definitely, we'll talk more about him in a minute, but they definitely lean heavily on Bruce Willis, and then we finally get some Samuel L. Jackson. And just to clarify, I did go ahead and check out RUUnbreakable.com to see if that website's still up. It is not. That's a bummer.
That's too bad, because I bet you would be unbreakable. Have you ever broken a bone, Kyle?
Yeah, I broke my hand in the same spot twice.
So you are not unbreakable. Okay.
No, not unbreakable at all. Now, let's talk about the box office numbers here. So Unbreakable debuted at the box office on November 22nd, 2000. Again, it was the third film from M. Night. The film was distributed by Buena Vista with a runtime of 106 minutes and a production budget of $75 million. Opening weekend, Unbreakable was the number two movie at the box office, bringing in over $46 million opening weekend. Unbreakable would repeat as the number two movie in week two, bringing in another $14.4 million over the weekend and taking the 10-day total to $66.3 million. JD, your thoughts on the first 10 days?
I think that it's a good testament for the time and the star power of Bruce Willis and Sammy J, for M. Night, for coming off of, you know, Sixth Sense. I think that what the studios tried to do was put together a perfect storm of a film, and I don't know that they necessarily understood how big it could be. I'm sure they were hoping it could be bigger, but I think that it was a success.
Do you think the schoolyard effect was in play?
I do, especially since it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, and he was just training audiences to understand that there's more than meets the eye.
Well, by the standards that we made, it is actually not the schoolyard effect. They only lasted 4 weeks inside the top 10 before dropping to number 13 in week five, on its way to grossing $95 million domestically. Now, internationally, it killed it. So $153 million internationally, and the worldwide total, $248,118,121. So, JD, final thoughts on the box office numbers?
He's, you know, such a product of his culture and his environment, and he's so socialized and culturized to American audiences that I think it's a great testament to just how skilled he can be. You know, we're going to go ahead and ignore The Happening. Hopefully we don't talk about that very much at all, but we can if we want. So that movie sucked.
I'm not a fan of The Happening at all.
I can't understand. I was so confused. They could have given $10 to a 12-year-old and gotten a better film. Whatever. Anyways, M. Night. Yeah.
So how much of this do you also contribute to Bruce Willis being a massive, massive movie star in 2000?
You're talking internationally or just all together? All over.
I mean, he's as big as it gets in 2000, right?
He's a star. He's definitely A-list. He's still a household name. He's in a movie now. Like, obviously, much of the success that Glass had and will continue to have, you know, teeters on his face being attached to it. I mean, is he not a bigger star than Samuel L. Jackson? I would say he is. And even James McAvoy, like, who's the star out of those three? Who's the name that has transcended generations? It's Bruce Willis.
Yeah, it was a pretty good follow-up. He was actually in The Sixth Sense, and then he did Unbreakable, and then he had like almost 2 years off after that before he had a decent movie, and then, boy, it's been a bit of a slide since then. There's been a couple kind of thrown in there that were just more like nostalgia roles and stuff that they kind of went back to. But yeah, he's kind of went downhill for a while now.
Is this our first Bruce Willis movie?
It sure is, yeah.
I didn't even put that together. This is our first Brucey dubs.
You know, a couple movies I definitely want to get into at some point. Die Hard for sure. I also at some point want to dissect 12 Monkeys and also Armageddon. Because I like Armageddon, and that movie gets a lot of hate.
We can save that for the episode. I don't want to say that I like it or that I hate it. It's a movie that I didn't realize received hate until I was much older and, like, talking to people as an adult, and they're like, oh, that movie sucks. And I was like, I always thought it was universally loved. And so reading stuff, I don't know if I like put myself in a closet with that movie and it was like, no, no, Armageddon's good. I don't want to hear anything ever. I didn't see Armageddon in theaters. I definitely saw Deep Impact instead, but you know, whatever.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the comparison between Unbreakable and Split. So again, 17 years apart, Split brought in almost $280 million worldwide, which I'm sure if you factor in inflation is actually probably less than Unbreakable, but the budget for Split was only $9 million bucks compared to $75 million. And I read an article over the weekend too that M. Night has actually been self-financing his last several movies, I think dating back to The Visit. Any thoughts on that?
I could definitely see that with The Visit because it was such a homegrown movie that was so constricted and, you know, based on performances in front of and behind the camera, you know, due to the nature of how it was presented. I could definitely see it like that. And you could see his handprint in it all over the place. But I'm a little surprised to hear that for Split. And then I'm assuming Glass was the same way. But I didn't realize it was only a $9 million film. I mean, essentially, you have a film that's in Split that's contained to two locations, maybe three.
Yeah.
Which is a marvel. But I mean, it's an expansive location that's the main location. It's like it's one room, but there's also two, three, four, five, just like six other areas in that same room. But it's still very, very contained.
Yeah. I just think, you know, if you or I were in that position where we had made so much money that at some point we could just finance our own movies, wouldn't it make more sense to do that and kind of take the studios out of it, take those producers that like to throw their two cents into it, kind of out of the picture and be able to do your own thing? I just think that's awesome. I'm surprised more directors haven't done that, like Spielberg, although Spielberg owns Amblin, so maybe that is part of his deal. But I mean, I'm just surprised more haven't done that.
Well, I mean, so many directors and producers have their own houses for what they do in cross production with bigger, both distribution and then studios for it. So the way that it works is he comes in and he says he's going to finance the film, but he needs power behind him from a distribution company that says that they're going to match his financial commitment and say that we're going to spend X amount of dollars for the marketing to get it out there as well. So he's not spending money on the commercials and all of that. But for the initial financing of getting it off the ground, it's a very risky venture because he has everything to lose in that case.
Seems like it came up all aces in this case. Well done for him. Now let's talk about top 10 movies of the week for November 22nd, way back in 2000. I found this really interesting. How about this for some throwback? The number one movie that week was How the Grinch Stole Christmas, which just put out a new movie like 2 months ago during Christmas season, and was ahead of Unbreakable. Number three was 102 Dalmatians. Number four, Rugrats in Paris, the movie. Boy, these are tough. Number five, Charlie's Angels. Number six, Bounce. Number seven, The Sixth Day. Number eight, Men of Honor. Number nine, Meet the Parents, which was in week eight. And number 10, Little Nicky. Might be a future episode. I know you like that movie. I'm not as big of a fan. But any standouts for you in the top 10 there?
I mean, outside of The Sixth Day, which I can almost guarantee won't be a future episode, unless it's a poll topic for an Arnold week and you guys just decide to troll us. We have talked about Little Nicky before. I don't know
Meet
about
the Parents. We've,
you know, I can see us doing Meet the Parents, especially I love anytime a movie has a scene that takes place in an airport. To compare it to how airports are now, and for him to just walk around and go bum 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 bum. What if I were a bombardier? One of my favorite scenes in that movie.
Yeah, it's a tough weekend there. I mean, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, I know, did really well financially, but yeah, not a lot to pick from there. Now let's get some feedback from the critics here. We'll use Rotten Tomatoes to gauge how they received Unbreakable. JD, how do you think the critics received it?
Okay, so let's think about this from you are a critic, it's 2000, you have one of the hottest directors coming off of a massive hit, and he's given Bruce Willis, again, he's giving Samuel L. Jackson, He's obviously given himself because he appears in all of his movies. Dun-dun-dun, laugh track. I want to say from a critical stance and having not done The Sixth Sense, I'm assuming that scored really well critically, that the critics were expecting this to be one kind of movie. And based on the trailer, you would be expecting one kind of movie and you're given a slightly different movie, but you're given it in a great way. I think that Unbreakable is a very solid film. If you haven't watched it before, you might think it a little slow, but you have to understand that slow burn of this origin story, which I think critics may have both respected but scoffed at the same time. Now, in terms of if I wanted to give it a critical grade, I would give it like much higher than I think the overall critics did. So I'm going to bring it down a little bit and say 65%. I want to say more critics probably liked it than didn't, though. So I want to hear some of the good responses, but I think overall it was probably like, yeah, that was good, but not the movie I wanted to see.
Gosh darn, are you right on almost. 69% was the overall number.
I almost got to say 69. Dang it.
And the general, like going through all the top critics, it seemed like they were mostly positive, like you said. Let's hear from a couple of them, though. So I've got Desan Thomas of the Washington Post gave the film 4 out of 5 stars and said, whatever your final verdict, you could go worse than enjoy one of the most fertile minds in Hollywood. What do you think about that one?
I'm trying to wrap my mind around it. You can go worse than one of the most fertile. So that's a compliment, right?
You could, I'm sorry, I said you could go worse. It's you could do worse than enjoy one of the most fertile minds in Hollywood.
So that's still a compliment, though. She's saying,
Yeah, it's a compliment. Yeah.
Okay. I was like, that's such a weird.
I think it's a man, but yeah, the name's up for debate.
It's just such a weird way that they put it. And it was just like, wait a second. It's almost like one of those backhand compliments where it's like, well, you could have done that better. And it's like, wait, could I have though? Because I did it well.
It almost feels like he said, well, you could have picked one of the other crappy movies, but I mean, or you could go enjoy one of these great minds, which will confuse the hell out of you with this movie. That's kind of what I got from it. Now let's hear from our normal critic here. Roger Ebert gave the film 3 out of 4 stars and said, even if the ending doesn't entirely succeed, it doesn't cheat, and it comes at the end of an uncommonly absorbing movie. What do you think about that one?
I like that because a lot of times the problem that I have with what the modern twist ending is that it cheats. And that's a great way of putting it. If you look at maybe not the first Saw movie, which is in our archives, but if we did the second Saw, right?
We did.
Gosh, it seems like a lifetime ago that we watched that movie. My point being, there's a movie where the ending cheats you and anything can happen. Literally, what he means by a cheating ending is you can write anything to happen and then you just pull a deus ex machina out of nowhere where you get to say, oh, but by the way, there was this character unseen the entire time, like the movie You're Next. Do you remember that?
I do.
That was a pretty good, a very cool movie, you know? But then it cheats the ending by saying, oh, by the way, all of this horror that you've been witnessing and watching everybody go through, let us reintroduce this character that you've known for 5 minutes and let him tell you everything that's going on and then sum it all up just so glamorously because the whole rest of the story is riddled with plot holes. It's hard to write. It's hard to do.
And then let me throw in one bad review. So Jay Carr of the Boston Globe was not a fan. And he said, Unbreakable is a film that begins with a train wreck and then, figuratively speaking, becomes one. What do you think about that?
I don't know that it becomes a train wreck. I can see why people would dismiss this. And if you're not engaged and invested in finding it out, you're going to scoff along the way. But it, as was said earlier, it's an absorbing film. And if you're not absorbed into it, you're going to miss the little idiosyncrasies of importance that occur.
Right. Okay. Well, that's going to pretty much wrap it up for this episode. Again, go check out Glass. It's in theaters now. I think we got a thumbs up from you, JD, on Glass without giving away too much.
Yeah, we'll get into it more. I've become much more cynical with modern movies and my review and critique of them. So when we do review it more in depth, you'll hear me complain about a lot of things, but that doesn't mean I didn't enjoy it. Okay. It's not a McDonald's cheeseburger where you're just going into it for the empty calories. It's a little bit more high caliber than that. You know, I don't know what a high caliber.
Five Guys?
Yeah, it's like, there you go, Kyle. This is a Five Guys kind of a movie.
Okay.
It's worth the money. It's worth the price of admission.
By the way, get the fries. The fries are good there.
And the peanuts.
The peanuts are good too. So check out Glass. We're going to have that review up as soon as we can. I'm going to see it tomorrow afternoon. We're recording tomorrow night, and it's just a matter of editing and getting it all out to you guys as quick as we can. The week after that, we are going to be picking the winner of our poll topic, which by the time you listen to this, there should be an episode up that you can listen to where we break it down, usually around 5 minutes long. Go in, vote on our Twitter right now, @BackInTimePod. And let us know what rom-com you want us to cover as we get into Valentine's Day weekend, her early February. Now, as always, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, CastBox, YouTube. All the full episodes are up there. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/backintimepod, backintimepod.wordpress.com. And you can email us at backintimepodcast@gmail.com. But it's that time of the episode to climb back into the DeLorean, punch in today's date, and return back to present day. We'll be back in a couple days with the Glass review. See ya!
Unburpable.